Welcome to From the Booth, a podcast where we talk about the films playing at international cinema at Brigham Young University. I'm Marc Olivier, co-director of international cinema, and I'm joined today by Dr. Sarah Phoenix of BYU's French and Italian department. Professor Phoenix is currently working on a book project about maternity and fashion in 19th century France. She's also a colleague and good friend, and I'm really happy that today we get to talk about a film we both love, Céline Sciamma's 2014 film, Girlhood. Welcome back to the podcast, Professor Phoenix.
Thanks for having me.
So let's just set up the film a little bit first. Girlhood, first of all, I think in French, bande de filles, you know, sort of gang of girls, I guess. What's it talking about? How can you, you know, sort of set up the who are the girls in this film?
So the majority of this film takes place in a Parisian suburb. And to clarify, right, suburb has certain connotations in English and especially in the U.S., that are totally different than when you say banlieue in French. And essentially it's the opposite, right, of what we would consider a stereotypical suburb in the US. So there are some wealthy suburbs of Paris, but this particular kind of suburb is a community that is much more racially diverse, right, than the kind of white flight American suburbs that developed right over the course of the 20th century. And so they are majority immigrants or children or grandchildren of immigrants who came to France. Usually the earliest point right after World War II and throughout the decolonization process throughout the 50s and 60s.
And this is not your picturesque suburb. These are like hastily constructive, low rent housing, massive apartment blocks, concrete everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. So I know that Céline Sciamma, and these are all black girls.
Yes.
And I know she wanted to do a casting that was really like broad and look for whoever felt the most authentic. So I don't think that at the time that these were professional actors. I think that they do such an amazing job.
They do, and that really comes across, the sense of authenticity really comes across in the film.
Yeah, right. This is a real taste of something that I think a lot of people don't have, because we go to Paris, you visit Paris, you see all the tourist attractions. Nobody's going to say, oh, but let's go outside the city and wander around these, housing projects. Mm-hmm. And there's even a fear of it that some people have associated with that. Right. And I think those are the types of dynamics that play into it. What are the key types of themes that you might look at when you look at this film?
This film is all about how to be a girl in various kinds of hostile environments. And so the major themes of this film for me, and what I talked about with my students when I taught this film, we talked about hair. Mm-hmm. We talked about dancing, and then we talked about relationships with men.
Okay. Let's talk about hair first. Okay. I'm really curious what you have to say about that. I mean, I know there's a couple of fight scenes. There's like pulling of hair. What stands out to you about hair in this film?
Well, what stands out to me is the first time we see the main character, whose name is Mariem, but who is rechristened Vic, V-I-C.
For Victoire, victory.
Exactly. This is also, I think, a nod to the quintessential coming of age film that Sophie Marceau starred in the 80s, where it very much told the story of an upper middle class white girl in some very nice parts of Paris, where Céline Sciamma is essentially saying, well, I want to tell another teenager story.
Yeah.
And another experience.
Well, and her name, at least, I mean, she changes it, but her name, Mariem, kind of recalls Marianne, absolutely, who is the, you know, liberty leading the people. People might be familiar with. It's the symbol of France.
Absolutely.
So you do have this play on, okay, we're going to tell a story of another
right.
typical French girl.
And whereas Sophie Marceau has for decades really exemplified an ideal of French beauty,
mm-hmm.
right? Sadine Sciamma is really helping us to realize that, you know, these stereotypes that we've developed and that have been promoted
mm-hmm.
right, by tourism industries and all kinds of, you know, fashion industries, that is not the only France that exists.
Exactly.
That is one France.
Right. Well, okay. So Mariem, who then becomes Vic,
mm-hmm.
her hair does go through quite the transformation.
Absolutely.
What right. is that?
So the first time we see her, her hair is in braids.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a much younger look than mm-hmm. she does by the time of the end of the film. And when you look at films, if you take, for example, the Jean de Florette films, mm-hmm. Ballon des Sources,
mm-hmm.
right, a symbol of transition from childhood to adolescence is taking your hair out of braids.
Mm.
And we see that transition with Vic throughout the movie. The first time she encounters the rest of her girl gang,
mm-hmm.
her hair is in kind of these childlike braids.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second hairstyle we see is she has longer hair, but mm-hmm. it's straight.
Straight. Mm-hmm.
And she looks much older. And she has really definitely much more come into herself.
It's a glow up for sure.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Hashtag yeah. glow up.
Yep.
And then at a certain point, we see her in this platinum blonde wig,
mm,
right? And it's
yeah.
being used for purposes of disguise, and
mm-hmm.
she's working. She falls in with a rough crowd. But what the film also shows us is that it's when you grow up where she does, it's
mm-hmm.
really hard to avoid falling into these kinds of social dynamics. When, especially when you encounter hostility at home.
Yeah. And I mean, in a lot of ways, it reminds me of Truffaut's Les 400 Coups, 400
yes.
Blows, because she is excluded. I mean, initially, she's excluded from further education.
Yes.
And so there's a huge avenue of, you know, possibilities that's cut off to her from the beginning.
Right.
And then what are her options left? And it kind of feels like, well, marriage is an option. Other types of relationships and or possibly, you know, affiliation with drugs and
right.
all kinds of things. So there aren't a lot of appealing options.
No.
And she finds a friend group that, you know, I mean, it really is like a friend group. I know it's called the gang of girls in French, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a way, I almost feel like that's something that people from the outside would call them,
right.
you know?
Right.
But so what do you make of these hair transformations then?
Well, the very last hairstyle we see, her hair is braided into cornrows and she has a much more androgynous look. And
mm-hmm.
in fact, because she has suffered at the hands of many of the men in her life, including probably worst of all, her older brother, which in this film, unexpectedly, she has this very caring and tender boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
Love interest. But her brother inflicts physical abuse on Vic because he doesn't find the relationship appropriate. And so I think that the last iteration of her hair that we see is that she's finding it incredibly difficult just to exist as a girl. And she wants to
yeah.
enter a more androgynous and more masculine space.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's safer.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you really get the feeling that when she gets dressed up, then
mm-hmm.
she feels like she's more in danger than when she's one of the guys.
Exactly.
And kind of suppressing her femininity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, what about dancing? There is a key dancing mm-hmm. scene. I want to know, but there's multiple dancing scenes. This is a great theme.
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you want to start with?
You know, I think I would start with the one in the metro. I think that's the first one that we encounter mm-hmm. in the film. And she's just made friends with this group. And this is really, it's a callback to the very first scene of the film mm-hmm. where you have these girls in full football pads, American mm-hmm. football, and football gear mm-hmm. playing American football. Is a night game.
Which right? is definitely a choice. I mean, this is an artistic choice. This is not a thing.
No.
Okay. You're not going to stumble upon a group of girls in American football uniforms playing.
Exactly.
It's definitely, she's trying to tell you something
yes.
here.
Yes. And it's full pads. They are
yeah.
completely decked out.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls are able to play physically and to yell and to mm-hmm. really just be their exuberant selves on the football
right.
field. And they're chatty and they're just overjoyed to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to leave the stadium where they're playing and they start to see, they enter into the space more of where it's a masculine space
right.
where the male teenagers are hanging out
mm-hmm.
in this incredibly foreboding scene.
It is.
Where the girls get quieter and quieter.
And they break off
yes.
one by one until there's only like Mariam left.
Yes.
Right. So
yes.
you do feel this like splintering of the group and the solidarity and the power maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the first glimmer of that kind of life and vivacity, right, that we see again
mm-hmm.
in Vic is in this subway scene where they're listening to, once again, there's an American
yep.
pop culture
mm-hmm.
Kind of informing the scene with the song they're dancing to.
Mm-hmm.
But her friend says, do what I'm doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Follow me, right? Dance.
Right.
I'm going to teach you how to dance.
Yeah.
And it is really only in these kind of female enclaves
mm-hmm.
that she is able finally to throw off the fear and the oppression that she encounters in every other part of her life.
Yeah.
And just be joyful.
Yeah.
Be a young person.
And it's interesting, you know, with that happening in the metro. Okay. I was just having a conversation with somebody who said he talked to some people who went to Paris and, you know, they were disappointed. And I said, mm-hmm. what were they disappointed in? You know,
right.
I said, usually Americans go to Paris and the problem is we end up being rude in some way and then we're reacted to and
right.
then we think the French are rude when in fact, and that one of those ways is space, is that French kids typically learn to take up very little space and
mm-hmm.
Both audible space and physical space.
Right.
And these girls on the metro, in some ways, this is a form of othering too, is that they take up space, they feel free, they're gonna mm-hmm. own that space, even like in the mall when they go to
yes.
You know, shopping, and you see the racism of them being surveilled, like
right.
You're probably going to be shoplifting, you know, this feeling that together they can
right.
they can still like have space.
Right.
And I guess that brings us to sort of the hotel mm-hmm. scene, because
mm-hmm.
this is this weird sort of liminal space.
Yes.
And it's one of the most, it's probably one of my favorite scenes in a mm-hmm. film, like period. It's,
yes.
could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So the girls, after their kind of day on the town, they go and rent this hotel room. And again, this is not a space that exists where they live.
Right. Right.
They have to go
they
outside
have to rent
of
it.
Their environment. Absolutely. And renting being the key, because
mm-hmm.
this is not a place where they can stay long term. And the girls just do exactly what four teenage girls would do with a rented hotel room. And they laugh and they have snacks. And
mm-hmm.
then one of them, my favorite scene of the film is when they put on Rihanna's song Diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the patience of a filmmaker like Sadie Sijama, where I think a lot of American audiences wouldn't be patient enough to listen to the song
mm-hmm.
from start to end.
Mm-hmm.
And then not to have some kind of montage, right? Of,
right.
You know, created around this. No, she films the girls in real time singing along to this song, right? In a language that isn't theirs, in a space that doesn't belong to them, but they've made it theirs, right? And they
yeah.
very much make the song theirs.
Yeah.
And it's, I just it's call it such, Black Girl Joy.
Yeah, you know, and I know that Rihanna let them use the song because she had seen the a cut of what they were going to do with it and, you know, just loved the kind of exuberance and joy. And I mean, they're just, you know, lip syncing, singing along with the song. And the lighting is just gorgeous in this scene. And you really do feel this is like, these are diamonds, you know, that these girls are these diamonds that are neglected. They're they're pushed, literally, you know, pushed out of the city.
Right.
And
they're certainly not recognized as such in their own communities. And what's astonishing about this scene, not only the power and the beauty of it, but it happens about halfway through the film. Right. And we've talked before about how a lesser filmmaker would have ended the film with a similar scene.
Yeah, that's right.
But what Celine Sciamma understands about life in general and about the lives of these girls is that no, you cannot stay in this oasis of safety and girl power. The world is not structured like that. So inevitably you have to leave that protective bubble.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's really, it's really beautiful. Now you said men was your third theme. How do you think the men come across in this, in this movie? Do you think it's fair? Am so I trying to do a gotcha question?
Right. I will say, not great, but also, yes, it's fair.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you. I think there are different types of men in this film. There is not, and that they're all types of men that exist in the real world.
Yes, exactly. So,
yeah.
And with the opening scene, I think that Sciamma captures brilliantly the sense of vulnerability that women feel in public space all the time.
Yeah.
That men aren't necessarily aware of.
Yeah.
And most often are completely oblivious to.
Right.
Because they're not victimized, at the same rates. Mm-hmm. But that is our first encounter with the male population, as the girls. And the girls are doing a traditionally, very masculine sport.
Right.
And so there's that role reversal, but as soon as they leave, again, that protective bubble, they might be wearing the football pads, but they are no longer occupying that male dominant space. But what something that I really appreciate about this film is you have the older brother, who is a bully, who is a complete tyrant. And because Vic's mother has to work so much, he essentially rules the home, and she's really victimized by him, physically, psychologically, just kind of in every awful way that you can think of. But again, Sciamma gives her this incredibly sensitive, tender, protective boyfriend who said, and I think she's saying, you know, there are different kinds of men. And even though these men all come from the same place.
Right.
And share to some extent a similar culture. There is another way to be. There are other possibilities here.
You do sense, you know, the type of predicament that a girl would find herself in, falling in love with somebody and sort of the cultural taboos that are associated with what type of girl you're going to be seen as if, you know, if you give into this. And yeah, there's some really tender moments. There are even some sort of oddly tender moments in some of the darkest places in the film. I think it's sad that maybe you would feel more protected by somebody who's involved in things like drugs.
Right.
But you also can see how somebody might be sucked into almost a paternalistic figure.
Absolutely.
That comes in and says, hey, come work for me. You know, I got you. And then is going to give her, you know, things to do. And she's that. Yeah. You can do well at this.
Right. And money to live on. And
yeah,
it's about survival. Right? Yeah. It's not about greed or accumulation of great wealth right. for Vic.
And then meanwhile, you know, there's like the girl who's got a baby, who's yes. like had a child early, and you, it really does explore all kinds of possibilities.
Right. Absolutely.
That, yeah.
Well, and you have a couple of characters, you know, really kind of rechristen themselves, right? Lady.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's Lady that we find out that her real name is Sophie.
Yeah.
And her friends die laughing when they find that
because out. It's such a French white girl name.
Totally. It would be as if you, in an American film, right, that a young black girl were named Karen. Right? It would just, there's so much like comic weight that yeah. comes with that name.
Well, and is it a shout out to Sophie Marceau and the white girl centered movie?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it seems not coincidental, right. maybe, or happy right. coincidence. Right. Yeah. I mean, this idea that they're claiming identities and giving themselves new names is fascinating as right. well, because it's like, how are we going to construct ourselves? And
right.
and it's like one area that I see in the film that I really notice is, you know, how this uses space and the fact that it uses both like these liminal spaces, like being in a hotel, being right. sort of in a nowhere space right. that's meant to be a home away from home, but is totally generic, anonymous. Right? Mm-hmm. So that's one of the spaces that they occupy. The metro is mm-hmm. often just seen as this coming and going space, but they occupy it by like dancing and by, right. you know, being in that. La Défense, the space that right. people will go and dance and hang out there, is right on the border
yes.
between what some might consider, you know, the scary neighborhoods
right.
and the super touristy
right.
thing. There's a mall there and there's the big mm-hmm. arc, you know, the you know, like the Arc de Triomphe, but right. modern. So they're like occupying this little space in between.
Right.
And then the space that they live in, I think it's called like the Clos something or other.
Oh.
Anyway, it means flowered. It means a walled garden.
Okay.
The place. And that's what I feel like. It's a garden, but it's a garden that's just concrete and
right.
they're, you know, what is there for them to do in it? In fact, I looked up and found that this whole area where there are these things used to be like peach orchards and things.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. Anyway, I just think that this idea of like, where is space for these women, mm-hmm. you know, young women, what spaces do they have access to and how, you know?
And how long do they have access to those spaces where they feel empowered, where they can be themselves? And we get the answer because at the end of the film, right, and this is where Vic is wearing cornrows.
Right.
Right. She very much becomes one of the boys and starts to dress androgynously.
Right.
And even... that's the last dancing scene of the film where she dances with a young woman who's hanging out with the crew.
Mm-hmm.
But then one of the guys from the crew cuts in and starts to dance with Vic
mm-hmm.
in this very aggressive, clearly, you know, non-consensual kind of way.
Yeah.
So even when she's masquerading as a boy,
mm-hmm.
she still can't. Fully
right.
sees that freedom that she wants to have.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that this is in some ways a hard movie to yes. watch. But I feel like it's so respectful and filled with humanity and tenderness and love that like, even though it's a difficult thing to watch, it's an important
right.
movie to watch because I think a lot of us just don't have that kind of access
right.
to a different life like that. I mean, obviously we're dealing with another country here, mm-hmm. you know, but also we all kind of tend to stay in certain our own social circles. And that's what's
right.
great about, you know, if I do a plug for international cinema, I mean, I think that's what's great about seeing international films is
right.
being able to get exposure that's like, you know, authentic and that feels real.
Right.
And I do think that there's a certain degree of kind of collaboration that happens in constructing that. I know that Celine Sciamma got some flack from some people, like,
right.
why are you a white woman telling
right.
this story? And I believe she said, I, you know, like sure, I want there to be more right. Black women telling these stories. And, you know, she's doing the best she can with what right. she's got, but there are more now. I want to think of just the distance between, you know, we're dealing with 10 years now yeah. from when this came out. There are more and more, you know, interesting films coming out that, and some that we're hoping to show soon by like French Senegalese mm-hmm. filmmakers. And so, yeah. Any other sort of ending thoughts about the film, things that, that people should look for or thoughts?
So I'll say that at the end of the film, again, this is probably a universal caveat for international cinema, but do not expect to be satisfied in the ways that you want to be. The Céline Sciamma is giving us what we need and not what we want, mm-hmm. As far as like that very satisfying closure that we mm-hmm. get. But it's also the point of maximum possibility.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what we have been rooting for Vic the entire time.
Yeah.
To get.
And I really hope that people who watch this will look at somebody that they might have been tempted to say, oh, there's a gang of girls right. or a gang of boys for that matter, right. and maybe see them as people, as right. humans, and as people who are constructing their identity and right. who need solidarity for protection.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Okay, well, as we end, we're going to do a few rapid fire type questions. So I'm just going to ask you about four things. We'll see okay. how we go on this. Name a movie that you've watched more than five times or at least five times.
I'm going to give you a twofer for this one because okay. this is also bonus. What I think is the most underrated film
okay.
Of recent times. I'm going to say Wild Rose.
Wild Rose.
Yes. It's a movie starring, I think it came out in 2020, maybe 2019. Mm-hmm. But it stars Jessie Buckley, mm-hmm. who is this fantastic Irish actress, incredible singer. But Wild Rose is about a Scottish country singer trying to break into the Nashville scene. And it is this beautiful exploration of not only creativity, but it's also a motherhood of mother-child relationships. And you just see Jessie Buckley's astonishing talent, not only as an actress, but also as a singer.
Okay, that's awesome. Wait, now, and so that's an underrated movie, yes. too. It's true. I don't think I've
seen ever... it many more than five times.
You have? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, here's a would you rather. Would you rather abolish popcorn or soda from movie theaters?
I run on caffeine, so I'm going to have to say popcorn. It's just so much noisier.
And, yes.
Right, triggers misophonia.
Yes, that's me. I would gladly abolish popcorn, but all right. So you talked about an underrated movie. Mm-hmm. What's an overrated movie, in your opinion?
This, the first thing I thought of was because Ridley Scott had a truly terrible movie come out at the end of last year.
And Napoleon.
Yes.
Yes, I call it, what do I call it? Incel Napoleon and Manic Pixie Dream Girl Josephine. You know,
it's you don't just, need to see the movie. That's it. That's the entire movie
yeah.
the entire time. But what I think, and Ridley Scott has made some really, really good movies, but I think Gladiator is a mediocre movie masquerading as a great movie.
All right. Those could be some fighting words for some people, indeed. But I love it. I love a hot take. All right. Lastly, do you have a favorite movie villain?
I am going to have to say maybe all of the James Bond villains because
are your favorites?
Well, they just create, they're incredibly inefficient. They create these Rube Goldberg machines.
All style, no good yes. plan.
Yes, but a lot, but just the incredibly high camp value of who they are and what they're trying to do. It's such a simple task.
Right. You just kill them. But no, but, Mr. Bond has created this elaborate tank. And, you know,
which is exactly why we have the entire Austin Powers series.
Yes. Yes. Okay. That is a great answer. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us today on From the Booth. This podcast is produced by the International Cinema Program at BYU and supported by the BYU College of Humanities. We are solely responsible for the opinions and ideas expressed here, as they do not represent any official position adopted by the university or its supporting institutions. We thank our sound engineer, Hayden Underwood, and Johnny Stallings, who composed our podcast soundtrack. Look for us on Instagram at BYU_IC or on our website, ic.byu.edu. And until next time, keep seeing great international movies.